This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Well, welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 12th of April, 2021, and markets really closing on a strong note in the U.S. So I'll get to that in a moment. Tomorrow, just want to let folks know and flag that I am hosting an FX webinar. You can find that if you go to webinars.saxo, just type that into your browser. That's not a URL, but if you type into your browser, it sends you the right place. And that will be at 1 o'clock CET. So that these days would be 11 o'clock GMT. I think it's a pretty confusing period here. I think you can see that in some of the FX market action. As we know, we have a lot of incoming crazy data from a surge in sort of economic activity from the end of COVID lockdowns, and together with some real interesting pricing pressures that are coming through in the US. But I'll cover all of that and some thoughts on where things are headed across the FX space in that webinar tomorrow, if you care to tune in. And if you do miss it, you can tune into a recording that is generally posted within about a day of the actual webinar itself. Okay, so let's get back into the markets. We have on slide three, pointing out here, we had an all-time high close on the NASDAQ 100. So finally getting some catch up there. Of course, the S&P 500 long ago started marching to new highs, closed clear of 4,100. And clearly with the NASDAQ stocks, more interest rate sensitive, we've had treasury yields sort of consolidating more or less sideways over the last, basically since the period of that strong rally. So it really is just everything up across the board, Peter, isn't it? It's a bit hard to find weak spots in this market.
Well, yeah, there are two weak spots the past week, I would say. So European momentum has slowed down pretty dramatically. So Eurostoxx 50 futures are flat for over the past week, and also trading down here in early trading. And then, you know, elsewhere in China, we've been mentioning that a couple of times with their technology stocks under siege from the Chinese government. The government there wants to increase competition and also limit the power of these technology companies. And there has been an antitrust investigation going on for weeks in Alibaba. Part of that was also the IPO of their Ant Group, their payments and fintech group that was postponed indefinitely. We don't know when that will come online again. And over the weekend, we got the finalization of the antitrust investigation with a $2.8 billion fine by regulators in China of Alibaba, and that's around 4% of their revenue, so not a big deal for Alibaba in terms of also their free cash flow generation. This is more, in my opinion, virtue signaling, and they had to send that signal. They also ended the antitrust investigation with some positive wording that they, of course, support technology and the likes. And I think that was probably the Chinese regulators recognizing that a lot of uncertainty has been building in China over all this uncertainty over technology regulation, because what is the long-term impact of regulation? That is the key question, because all these fines, we know that from the US and Europe, they don't make a huge difference to companies and their behavior. So the key here is, can you do regulation that really impacts their long-term earnings growth rate? That is the key question. And I'm humble enough to say that I don't know. I don't think a lot of investors actually do know what will be the impact on Chinese technology companies. So we'll have to take that on a quarter-by-quarter basis. But as you see here on slide four, a nice jump in Alibaba shares today in Hong Kong. And that was, I think it's a healthy and much needed rebound, because our China consumer and technology basket was actually the worst performing segment on Friday, down almost 2%. But keep in mind, all the other Chinese technology companies or stocks are down in anticipation of fines going to other technology companies.
Yeah, and I guess that was a bit of a silly question on my part, a bit tough to find a weak spot, because clearly under one day performance, we're seeing that even though all of the big broad averages from small caps to S&P 500 and NASDAQ 100 had pretty strong sessions into the end of the week, clearly there's some pockets of weakness in those speculative areas, as we're seeing down 1% on a one day basis. So interesting mix of performance there. So what about treasuries? It's perhaps we're up for some key answers here to where the treasury market is. We have consolidated. It's been a pretty tight consolidation in terms of the range. You can see Altea has posted a slide of the 10-year yield on slide five here. What's your take on the treasury market here? I'll say we have a couple of auctions up today, 3-year, 10-year, and then the 30-year on Wednesday. Are we ready to march to new highs now, or do you think it could take some time to get up some more energy here? Or what's at stake?
Well, I think, John, that at this point of time, what is clear from last week is that the U.S. Treasury market remains volatile. The rally of last week was quickly broken by the strong PPA data coming from China and the U.S. And this week, we have CPI numbers coming out from the U.S. We have the beige book. And also on Friday, we have retail sales coming from China. So the reflation story is going to continue. And at a certain point, we are going to see the 10 years breaking above that 1.75%, which is a very important level, a resistance level right now. But the real resistance level that US Treasuries will find is at 2%, for the simple fact that if inflation expectations continue to rise, and right now they are above 2%, they are around, for the 10 years, around 2.35%. If they break above 2.5%, it is impossible for US Treasury yields not to follow. So I remain bearish. I believe that at this point in time, it's not a buying opportunities getting at these kind of levels. It might be different when we arrive at 2% because a series of events will be triggered, such as, for example, foreign investors getting into treasuries, which we are not still seeing right now. And that's going to be a key factor. We are going to look at the auctions today and tomorrow.
Right. And you mentioned a lot of moving parts and what you just mentioned there. And I think part of the effect we've seen of the sideways yields in markets has allowed some of these lower yielders to pop back to where they were. So something like Eurodollar, something like dollar yen, where we've seen the euro and the yen stiffening up on the sideways treasury markets, whereas elsewhere, there's still a lot of uncertainty. So you see on slide 6 that Eurodollar has rebounded smartly. I think it really needs a full rebound to 120 to start to suggest it's trying to make a more wholehearted effort at reversing higher. And I actually, somewhat related to this, tweeted out a great podcast with a conversation between Bilal Hafiz, the host of this Macro Hive podcast, with his ghost, Bobby Vidral, if I'm saying his name correctly. I believe he was German. I'm not sure he was introduced as German, but he sounded German to me. Regardless, a very good discussion of European politics, especially the German politics ahead of the election, which will be held in late September this year, and the potential rise of the Green Party and what that could mean for a more cohesive Europe. And especially important related to that is Italy's leadership under Draghi, which it really is Italy's perhaps last best chance to state its case and get things moving forward in its favor within the Eurozone context. And on that note, I'll tell you, so I highly recommend having a listen to that podcast. But on that note, you have this issuance of BTPs down in Italy, and seen the spreads are widening a little bit to Germany here. But take us through what's going on there in the Italian debt market, and also as an Italian, any angle you have on what I just spoke about there with Draghi and the German election.
Yeah, this week we have Italy coming to the market with 3 years, 3 and 5 years bonds on Tuesday and 15 years bond issuance on Wednesday. And the fact is that it's going to be key to understand whether the market is going to support this demand in light of the fact that Draghi announced on Friday that he's going basically to expand the debt to GDP ratio and is going to issue around 40 billion euros more of debt. My takeaway here is that BTPs remain in high demand. Last week, Italy has issued 50 years BTPs, and it was an exceptionally strong issuance. Order books reached around 64 billion of euros, and the issuance was around 5 billion. So there is strong demand. And the reason why there is such strong demand is because the yield offered by Italy is incomparable compared to other sovereigns in the euro area. The 50 years was issued at 2%, and it's very hard to find anything matching that kind of coupon. And also, if we think about real money and long-term investors, they are happier to hold Italian debt at 2% rather than with 50 years maturities, rather than holding a French debt with a coupon of 0.5%, which was the issuance that France issued in January. And right now it's down by 15%. So I think that this week what we will find out is that demand for BTP remains high. And despite the market reaction last week, that basically dumped a little bit, sold Italian debt on the news that the debt to GDP ratio is going to increase. Despite that, we are going to see still strong demand for these kind of securities because the bond market is after coupon income.
All right, key perspectives there on European sovereigns and perspectives on positioning and FX. You can see on slide 8, this is our commodity strategist, Ole Hansen's great weekly overview of the FX futures position and the overall dollar position, which you can see there. And you can see that that euro long, it's been taking a long time, but it's still reducing and is down to a fraction of what it was at its height. And the aggregate dollar short is at its smallest in something like 11 months. But positioning-wise, really not much to note except for the yen short has grown to something rather significant by historical standards, and the fact that the developed market positioning in general, if you take away the euro and the yen, is almost non-existent. So it's just not a lot of excitement in positioning terms in FX. And then rounding out FX, one reason you can see that is the indetermination on the chart. So have a look at Aussie dollar, for example. I mean, we're going on or entering our fourth week, I believe, in this very tight range of uncertainty, where we're trying to wait for a break either below 75.50 or above 77 to 77.50. And the trend readings on our FX board are showing the trend evolution is sort of the air coming out in terms of readings. The highest reading would be in absolute value terms would be sterling's negative 2.5. That's quite low. Generally, you see stuff in the threes and fours if there's a little bit moving in FX. Okay, let's go back to equities. And it's a really important week for equities. You've got a story here on Microsoft, Peter, but also just because obviously with a new quarter having come into view a couple weeks ago, we're going to get the first big batch of Q1 earnings from the US this week.
Yeah, that's correct, John. And if we start with the Microsoft story here, it's that they are in talks to acquire Nuance Communications for $16 billion. Probably a lot of you guys have not heard about Nuance Communications. I think it's a smaller company. As you can see here, revenue in the latest fiscal year that ended in September 2020, not following the usual calendar there, calendar year. 1.5 billion in revenue. Microsoft is attempting to take over the company at a pretty significant premium, $56 per share. It closed at around just north of 45 on Friday. If you look at the market capitalization enterprise, so if you include the debt, it's almost 15 billion. So, and with the premium, you're talking about a company that is being acquired at a forward basis of maybe somewhere between 12, 13, 14 times enterprise to sales. And as you can see, it's the company has a lot of it's pretty stable, although it had a recent hiccup more than a year ago where revenue was under pressure. But the cash flow generation is strong. And but at the key, I think, initiative here by Microsoft is to get into speech recognition and specifically its applications within healthcare. That is where Nuance has its business. And I think this is my take, at least. I think this is a big test on antitrust matters in the U.S. because you could think that Microsoft is just buying into, you know, a small part of the market. Who cares? It's just healthcare. Microsoft has never been there before. Why shouldn't they be allowed to do that? But there are a lot of, I think, application synergies with the speech recognition technology into their other businesses. And I think it's a general question. Should that just be put a cap on how on acquisitions from now on from these mega caps? Maybe we can not even call them mega caps, but ultra caps. I mean, I think Microsoft has a market value very close to $2 trillion. should they just be allowed to buy every single important piece of technology just because they can? I think this is a key test, and I think it's interesting given what we have seen recently in China. And then if we move to the earnings season, John, I promised last week that I would narrow down the time scale, apologizing for all the 2020s. I should have, of course, this is on slide 11 for those that are looking at the slide deck. I should have put in, you know, the quarterly classifications there as well. But what I wanted to show here is that NASDAQ 100 has been the clear winner in terms of earnings growth and the rebound from the pandemic. So these are, you know, the cumulative change in quarterly earnings per share since Q4 2019. As you can see, NASDAQ is the big winner. But you know, the S&P 500 has still not reclaimed the highs from Q4 in terms of earnings, Q4 2019. So it's still an earnings drawdown. The MSCI World is doing better, and this is probably the case for the value, because there's a lot more value stocks in the MSCI World than S&P 500. And I think the key test will be on Wednesday with Wells Fargo and JP Morgan Chase, the two large financials in the US, big footprint on commercial banking and consumer banking, obviously always important. And then Teladoc Health is part of that network of very richly valued equities. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that they are part of our bubble basket. So I think this is a key test of what is the strength on these growth stocks. If you miss slightly, will you be hammered on the stock price, or can you actually survive it? So I think that will be one of the things I'll be watching on Wednesday, and then we will talk on the other earnings as we progress through the week.
Yeah, it's a great perspective there on when you're at such highs, new highs in the equity market, how is news treated in terms of sell the fact, buy the rumor, whatever. So a very key test for markets this week for sure. And there's an awful lot going on this week. And something I actually don't have on the calendar as we talk about the macro calendar highlights on slide 12 is the a couple of political meetings in Germany, the CSU and CSU, the CDU. So the sister party of the CDU, Merkel's party, of course, is the CSU, generally in the south and somewhat smaller, so the smaller sister party. Their leader, Markus Söder, has declared himself a candidate for the chancellorship at the elections this September. So this is at least quite a bit of a bomb in the coalition or the bloc there. And one of the reasons for this is there's been a string of scandals in the CDU related to the vaccines and profiting off of that, and it's really wearing on the popularity of the party. And as well, Armin Laschet, the CDU leader at present, is extremely unpopular. So that bears watching as we head towards September as well. And then actual data today, very light, but if we look at this week, we have the 3 and 10 year auctions today. Those are important. And then further out, we have pretty important stuff. So the March CPI is out tomorrow. It's of course the April, May, June CPIs are going to get far more interesting in terms of the year-on-year readings. And are we going to be pushing to 4%, 5%, some crazy level like that, or even higher? And then we have the U.S. retail sales, where we see the impact of these stimulus checks that were sent out in March. That is up on Thursday, as well as the Turkish Central Bank and more. But we'll be covering that day-to-day, some interesting stuff certainly coming up later this week. For now, we're going to call it a day. Thanks for joining, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.